23. Two Moors. Brown left Milgram in the Korean's laundry for a very long time. Eventually, a younger Korean, perhaps the proprietor's son, arrived with a brown-bagged Chinese meal, which he presented to Milgram with no comment. Milgram cleared a space among the magazines on the plywood coffee table and unpacked his lunch. Plain rice, boneless chicken nuggets in red dye number 3, fluorescent green vegetable segments, finely sliced brown mystery meat. Milgram preferred the plastic fork to the chopsticks. If you were in prison, he encouraged himself, you'd find this food a treat. Unless you were in a Chinese prison, some less cooperative part of himself suggested, but he worked his way through it all, methodically. With Brown, it was best to eat what you could when the opportunity presented itself. As he ate, he thought about the 12th century heresy of the free spirit. Either God was everything, believed the brethren of the free spirit, or God was nothing. And God, to them, was very definitely everything. There was nothing that wasn't God, and indeed, how could there be? Milgram had never been one for metaphysics, but now the combination of his captivity, medication on demand, and this text was starting to reveal the pleasure to be had from metaphysical contemplation, particularly if you were contemplating these free spirit guys who seemed to have been a combination of Charlie Manson and Hannibal Lecter. And insofar as everything was equally of God, they taught, those who were most in touch with the godness in every last thing would make it a point to do anything at all, particularly anything still forbidden by those who hadn't yet gotten the free spirit message. To which end, they went around having sex with anybody they could get to hold still for it, or not, as the case might be, rape being viewed as particularly righteous, and murder equally so. It was like a secret religion of mutually empowered sociopaths, and Milgram thought it was probably the gnarliest single example of human behavior he'd ever heard of. Someone like Manson, for instance, simply wouldn't have been able to get any traction had he landed among the brothers and sisters of the free spirit. Probably, Milgram guessed, Manson would have hated it. What good would it be to be Charlie Manson in a whole society of serial killers and rapists, each one convinced that he or she was directly manifesting the Holy Spirit? But the other aspect of the free spirit that fascinated him, and this applied to the whole text, was how these heresies would get started, often spontaneously generating around some single medieval equivalent of your more outspoken homeless mumbler. Organized religion, he saw, back in the day, had been purely a signal-to-noise proposition, at once the medium and the message, a one-channel universe. For Europe, that channel was Christian and broadcasting from Rome. But nothing could be broadcast faster than a man could travel on horseback. There was a hierarchy in place and a highly organized methodology of top-down signal dissemination, but the time lag enforced by tech lack imposed a near disastrous ratio, the noise of heresy constantly threatening to overwhelm the signal. The rattle of the door distracted him from these thoughts. He looked up from the remains of his lunch and witnessed the entrance of an extremely large black man, very tall and very wide, who wore a stout, thigh-length black leather coat, double-breasted and belted, and a black wool watch cap pulled low around his ears. The watch cap put Milgram in mind of the knitted woolen headgear crusaders wore beneath their helmets, and that in turn made the leather barnstormer resemble a sort of elongated cuirass. A black knight stepping into the laundry from the early evening cold. Milgram wasn't sure that there had actually been black knights, but couldn't a Moor have converted some African giant and been made a knight in the service of Christ? Compared to that free spirit, it seemed the likeliest of scenarios. Now, the black knight had stepped up to the Korean's counter and was asking him if he could clean furs. The Korean couldn't, he said, and the knight nodded, accepting that. The knight looked over and met Milgram's gaze. Milgram nodded too, unsure why. The knight left. Through the window, Milgram saw him join a second and remarkably similar black man in yet another black, double-breasted, belted leather coat. they turned south down Lafayette in their matching black wool skullcaps and instantly were gone. As Milgram tidied away his empty foam bowl and his foil dishes, he experienced a nagging sensation of having failed to pay adequate attention to something. Try as he might, he couldn't remember what that might have been. It had been a very long day.